We need real world love and real world justice. That last one, justice, is the key to any semblance of unity. You cannot have unity and you cannot have peace until you have justice. It is plain and simple. And we've got to stop talking in this very immature and incomplete and dishonest language. That is one of the things that we must stop doing. We just have to stop that. It's a disservice to us all, and it's a disservice to future generations. It's a disservice to our kids, it's a disservice to our, you know, to everybody. We can't talk to, you can't look your child in the eye and tell your child that we must all unify when your child can look on your TVs and see that the country is aflame. And then your child turns to you and says, why is there all this fire? Why are those people fighting? Come on, folks. We've got to be honest with ourselves that unifying without any justice is absolutely for the birds. Welcome to The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, January the 12th, 2021. On this episode of The Politocrat, 8 days. 8 days. This is not a matter of keeping calm and carrying on. It's a matter of having your feelings and moving from one day to the next. Impeachment is the name of the game right now. And my appeal, once again, for the Biden Inaugural Committee to remove this inauguration from the U.S. Capitol and have it at a different location. That and a few other things coming up next. Welcome back. I want to begin by saying that I hope you are well, and given this climate here in the United States, or wherever you are in the world, the climate that you find yourself in, and the state of affairs in the country you are living in, I hope that you are able to do the best you can, given what you've got and what you are in at the moment. And may you and yours continue to persevere and thrive amidst these trying and tough times. I just want to say that. And also, by the way, the Politocrat podcast has a Facebook page. You can search for it. Just type in The Politocrat on your Facebook if you use Facebook. I know some people don't. Heck, I'm really reluctant to use it myself, quite frankly. But The Politocrat is on Facebook, and you'll be able to tell that it is The Politocrat with the building. You will see a red and white building, or red and gold building, against a night sky. That is The Politocrat. And it is a podcast. So if you're doing a search, if there is a tab that allows you to search, type in podcast, and I think you'll find it even faster that way. But it is The Politocrat. It is available on Facebook. And I can be contacted there. You can contact the podcast there. I want to thank those of you who sent messages I want to thank you very much indeed for that. I try to respond to them, and I do appreciate it that you send the messages you do and say the things you do. It means a whole lot to me, and I do reach out to people as well and respond to them. But, you know, that cannot be promised all the time. I mean, it's just not something I have a lot of time to do, to be honest. But I do want to say thank you to you, all of you who send the really nice messages. I do appreciate that I can be of a source of benefit to you. For however long you listen, whether it's a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds, an hour or longer, because I know that these podcast episodes sometimes run longer than an hour. And self-indulgence is not the aim, but you get caught up talking about things when you don't have a script, as you know that I don't, as I've said, and then it does become an hour and 40 minutes. And, you know, again, I don't do that for self-indulgence, but inevitably, you know, these things happen because of the topic of the day or the way I get into some of these topics, which I think need to be gotten into. But all of that is to say thank you to you for listening, because this podcast doesn't exist without listeners, right? I mean, I could be talking to, well, nobody. But there is no audience without you. And so thank you very much. And again, I really want to say that there have been some very nice messages sent. And I do appreciate that. I really do. In these times, it's difficult. You know, there's lots of things that people could do. They could listen to some other podcasts. I'm sure that you do listen to other podcasts. And I do appreciate your support and thank you, you know, because you could be listening to something else, and I'm sure you do, but you could be choosing something else now instead of listening to me here, and you've chosen to listen to me here, at least for now. And so I'm grateful in this moment, in any moment that you reach out to this podcast for a portion of your life, a portion of time in your life, because time is everything. It means everything. Time, love, peace and health and justice. All those things are really important. And I'm going to touch on them or on some of them or all of those subjects in this podcast episode today. So thank you very much indeed. You know, we need to engender a language of love and a language of justice. Those are the two languages we need the most of right now. Before we talk of unity, like Joe Biden has talked about, we've got to have justice. We've got to have justice. And that's something that's got to be a part of the equation, or it's just a bunch of nonsense. It's completely for the birds. So, you know, we've got to have that. We've got to have that. And not only that, we've got to be able to be honest with ourselves and really look at what's going on around us on this planet and in this particular country called the United States of America. We really do. Because if we don't, this country will be swiftly ended. And quite frankly, ended by the people who are committing terrorist acts. I mean, literally, on the U.S. Capitol. I mean, and I'm going to get into that as well a bit, among other things. So again, we are 8 days away now. 8 days away. But these are 8 days of red wire, blue wire. And I'm not really talking about the political parties. I'm talking about literally, as I have said before, the pendulum literally swinging one way or swinging over another way. And which wire are we going to cut? Which wire are we going to sever? I mean, that's the question here. Which wire are we going to cut over these next 8 days? Because, I mean, this is the last stand for these folks. And they're not folks. They're murderers. They're terrorists. And this is their last stand. And as I'm going to talk about, and you know, one of the things I'm going to preview is this inauguration, I am very concerned about now. Very, very concerned. And I'm going to get into that later on. I also, you know, want to talk about this situation with the resolution for Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment. I think it's very clear now that Mike Pence is not going to do that. But I want to go into that a bit in this episode, and also about language and how important language is and other things. But I don't want to give the game away here in these first few minutes. Most importantly, mental health right now for all of us is going to be very important. Very important. And as I've said before, we all need this counseling. I mean, I do. Not because I think there's anything wrong with me. I don't think there's anything wrong. I'm doing relatively well. I feel healthy. I've got, you know, love and support and all very important things, right? I mean, these are all critical, right, to mental health. But what I'm talking about when I say that I think I need counseling is the trauma of these last 12 months. That's what I'm responding to. You know, I don't know what that is for you. Maybe it's something different for you. Maybe it's the same. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But for me, I'll speak for me since I'm speaking at the moment, is that how can you not want to at least seek some consultation with a mental health professional after all we've been through the last 12 months? Heck, the last 6 days. I mean, come on, folks. I mean, the last 12 months, especially with this virus, with these murders of black people, and you can't jog down your own street for 2 months because Ahmaud Arbery is killed in broad daylight. I mean, yeah, that's something that you need to look at. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. You're not a bad person. You're not weak. You're no less of a human being. You're not less of a man if you seek counseling or some help. And it's not that you are all messed up either. It is simply wanting to engage and connect with a professional who you can talk to about the way you are thinking and feeling about the world you're living in and how you're responding to it. That is a perfectly normal, human, rational, understandable thing to want to do. But the issue is that you and I are in a culture that says that you're not supposed to be able to do that, because if you're a man in particular, especially if you're a man, there's something less masculine about you if you choose to avoid talking about your feelings, about the way you're thinking, about the way you're dealing with things. Oh, you're less of a man now. I mean, 6 days ago, we had all this toxic masculinity on full display, toxic to the infinite. People, men running amok, white men running amok. If that's not a display of toxic masculinity, I don't know what is. Oh my goodness. It's a display of violence. It's a display of thuggery and terrorism and murder. It's a display of all of those things. And that is that. And I don't want to hear people making excuses for them. I'm going to get to that later as well. Yes, Angus King, I'm going to come after you again. Spoiler alert, because I'm sorry, that needs to be addressed again. And I don't even think I did a good enough job of addressing it in yesterday's episode. But again, you know, this is the thing that is just people making excuses. And here I go with the transition, right? With the mental ill. Oh, they're violent and they're mentally ill. They've got to be mentally ill. And you know, the mentally ill commit very little acts of violence in this country. See, that's the thing that just kills me, right? And it's always applied to white people when they do these kinds of things, right? And I'm not saying that there may not be some episode of that in their lives, but give me a break. So all of these thousands of thugs and terrorists and murderers that were in the Capitol 6 days ago, they are all mentally, oh yeah, they all have, come on. But when a black person, say like the DC sniper, remember him, had gone around shooting and committing acts of terror and shooting people and killing them with his 17-year-old accomplice, or however old he was, no one was talking about them being mentally ill. The black DC sniper, that is. He was black and was his accomplice, as was his accomplice. You know, no one was talking about them being mentally ill. You see, it's a term used by white people who do this to absolve, as I have said, their own of committing these violent acts. Or whether it's couched in, well, they're mentally ill or they were intoxicated. Like that somehow eliminates their responsibility for what they do. But when the black person does it, oh, they're criminals. Throw away the, you know, come on. Come on now. Come on. You've got to open your eyes here. Please, open your eyes. And let's really ask a question that must be asked in this country. Over these next 8 days, which wire are we going to cut? Is it the red one or the blue one?
Well, you know, Clayton, it is tough for the Republicans, I think, because a lot of people are in this category. You're talking about a big category, and if anybody comes out against it, or if anybody goes against the new Democratic line of stuff, they're going to be, it's going to be hard in certain areas. Now, you know what solves it? When the economy crashes, when the country goes to total hell,
yeah,
and everything is a disaster, then you'll have you'll have riots to go back to where we used to be when we were great. But the fact is that it's not easy on Republicans, because you have a lot of people that like their lives right now without working.
That was Donald Trump in 2014 on Fox and Friends. And the garbage and the hatred and BS and the lies that he was saying there. But in that clip, that 38-second clip, he said, we'll have riots again and you'll go back to when everything was great. And you had someone, you heard the voice of one of the Fox people going, yeah, yeah, in agreement, you know? Stupid. He was talking there in context about Obamacare, and he was advocating that, you know what solves it? When the economy crashes and you have riots. So in other words, let's cut to the quick here, listening with a third ear, as Joe Madison would say, violence for him, Donald Trump, solves it. That's what he's saying to you in that clip, that violence solves it, that solves these issues. Donald Trump has always been someone who's been a destroyer. I have said that here. I have said that on Twitter at the Popcorn R-E-E-L. And I have said that wherever I could say it, to people in conversations offline, everything. He has always been a destroyer. He has not even, this is not a question of incompetence. I've always said that to you. When this pandemic started and people were going, oh, how could he be so incompetent? This was not incompetence. It was deliberate. It was willful. I kept telling people this. I said it on this podcast. I said it online. I don't want a cookie or a medal, but I'm just saying that I said this, and so did many others. I am not the only one. But this notion that, oh, he's incompetent, you know, that benefit is always automatically given to white men in particular, that, oh, it's just incompetence, because they couldn't really want to destroy something. They couldn't possibly want to do that. Because they're incompetent, right? Because they wouldn't really want to stop black folk from getting health care, to stop black folk from getting help because they're dying disproportionately. Latinx, the Latino community being, killed in just numbers that are astronomical and extremely disturbing in Los Angeles County, in this state of California, where nearly half of the state's deaths are from that one county. 30,000 people have died from coronavirus in California, and over 12,000 of them are in one county alone, Los Angeles County. Overwhelmingly, those people who have died are Latino. Donald Trump is a destroyer. And so I'm sure he's very happy at that news that I just delivered to you, that grim news. He started his campaign saying those racist things about Mexicans. He is caged, put in concentration camps, brown people, people from Latin America, across Mexico and across the border, the U.S. border, the southern border, and people fleeing from political oppression and all kinds of things, and he's put them in concentration camps. Stolen over 700 of these families away, broken them up, like they did in enslavement, when these white men would do that to African people, break up their families, destroy their families in enslavement, in the Middle Passage, here in the U.S. as well. Come on. Like I said earlier, nothing is new here. Most of all this stuff has happened already. Or if I didn't say it earlier, I'm saying it now. These cycles of history are ever present. And they are ever current. History is current. History is right now. Make no mistake about it. History is now. And we've got to stop looking at history as this ancient relic. That happened 100 years ago. That's not even ancient. 300, 400 years ago ain't ancient. It's present, because all of the ramifications of what happened back then, whenever then is, are happening now. Something that happened to you when you were 5 years old, especially if that something was something traumatic, is still a part of who you are now. And it still perhaps informs the way you think about certain things now. Some people go to counseling for that. Other people don't. But regardless of the counseling aspect of this, which is very important, it's the fact that that is an event that is still present with you, even though it happened when you were five. Which is my point, speaking of making analogies that can be tricky, which is my point about history overall. Donald Trump, another swift segue back to where I want to get to, but an abrupt one at that, said in 2014, I just played the audio for you, that, we can go back to a place where there were riots in the streets and no. And 6 years plus later, what's going on? The economy has crashed. He did that, destroyed it, right? He is not this great economy meister. I don't know where that came from, but people in the corporate news media had been repeating that when he clearly is not, if you look at the record. There's been violence, the overwhelming majority of it by white people who, when there were Black Lives Matter protests, were infiltrating those groups. See, people have already forgotten that, and burning down precincts, police precincts in Minneapolis in the aftermath of the assassination and execution of George Floyd by police. And it was white people who did that. So this idea that white people love the police is just garbage. Sure, some of them might. Some of them are police. But If you want to have evidence that is not the case, well, let me point you to the evidence that this is not the case, that they love police. Burning down police precinct doesn't exactly signal your love for the police. And on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, bludgeoning a white police officer at that to death does not indicate that you love the police, even as you hold your Blue Lives Matter flag. That is not a good advertisement for you like police. It's your very selfish, cynical way of saying that you hate everything except yourself. In fact, you hate yourself also, but you just perhaps don't realize it yet. This is the issue. And when Donald Trump says this in 2014 to Fox and Friends, he is telling you what he's about, just like he told you what he was about on May the 1st of 1989, when in several newspapers, prominent national ones, including the New York Times and USA Today, he placed an ad that cost between $50,000 and $80,000 that shouted from the rooftops, "Bring back the death penalty, bring back our police." And this was for some 15 and 16-year-old black and Latino boys, innocent boys in Central Park. By the way, the rest of the media was howling for them to be hung from the highest tree as well. And this guy is talking about bring back the police. Give me a break. And this is the guy that hates police. It's an all cynical show. Because did he say anything about the deaths of these U.S. Capitol police? Did he say anything about that? And any meaningful thing? Has he met with the families of those police? Not that they'd want to meet with him, because he's the one that brought about their deaths. Come on. This is all BS, but it's extremely dangerous BS. If you think that this guy isn't about violence, but is also a coward, think again. He loves violence. He loves it. He loves it. And he's committed a lot of it against women. Number one. Number two, this guy is a coward because when Vietnam came along, he ran away. He turned tail and ran. Bone spurs. That's kind of like the default option for these Republican chicken hawks. Dick Cheney, I think, used the same thing. Rush Limbaugh used the same thing. They all used these things, right, to avoid serving in Vietnam. And this guy is a chicken. He is a coward. He won't go out in the rain. He's so afraid. His hair's going to get wet. This is how weak this guy is. I want you to understand this now. He refused to go to a memorial. I think on Bastille Day or whenever it was in France, he refused to go and honor or whatever it was. I forget what it was, to participate in those ceremonies. So the word was, because it was raining. And you had Angela Merkel there, I think, and you had some other officials there, and Macron was there and all the other. They were there. He wasn't, though. He was afraid. I mean, this guy is a wuss. And that's who you've got in the White House for at least these next 8 days. For these next 8 days. Guy's a coward. He was in his bunker when peaceful protesters were protesting during the summer. Black Lives Matter. He was in the bunker, afraid for his life. For what? And then he walks out there a few days later and puffs out his chest as these cowardly acts are happening, where these terroristic acts by police with Bill Barr's oversight are happening. Peaceful protesters tear gassed. That didn't happen last Wednesday. But let me tell you something. He loves violence. He loves to do it when it comes to violating women. He loves to watch it when it comes to watching other men do it to other men and women. He adores it. He gets off on it. This guy is a sick, sociopathic, psychopathic, evil. He must go. He must go. And look, he looked at those monitors last week with relish and zeal. He's got to be prosecuted, folks. Not just go. He's got to be in handcuffs. And for so many different things. But this is absolutely one of them. He incited this. He incited murder last week. He incited violence last week. You gotta fight like hell if you don't fight like hell. Come on, folks. It's really obvious. The guy that's been in the White House these last 4 years is a murderer. I told you this. I said this before on this podcast. This guy is a genocider. This is the guy that told Bob Woodward in February of last year, almost a year ago now, February 7th of 2020. Bob, this is very dangerous. This is deadly. This is very deadly, Bob. It's very deadly. In fact, it's more deadly than your strenuous flus. This is what he said to Bob Woodward. You read the book Rage if you don't want to hear this guy's cringe-worthy voice or my impression of it, my terrible impression of it. Then read the book Rage. I mean, you'll get more mileage out of reading that book than listening to me try to mangle that disgusting voice that you cannot get out of your brain for these last 4 or 40 or 50 or more years. But that's the situation. This guy is a coward. He is a murderer. He lied to us while he was telling Bob Woodward what the truth was. And he wouldn't fully authorize the Defense Production Act. He wouldn't send these ventilators out. He sent broken ventilators out. He wanted people to die. This isn't an incompetent person. This is a destructive, willfully genocidal person. And he's committed genocide. That's what you should also be impeaching him for. I mean, I'll get to the impeachment. I'm going to get to that in this next segment. This guy has got to be tried for war crimes. He's got to be tried for murdering an Iranian general, Soleimani, a year ago. People have already forgotten that. When he killed an Iranian general in Iraq. I mean, he's got to be tried for that. There was no indication of any threat to this country or to anything in this country. He murdered that general. Whether you like Soleimani or not, it's not the issue of whether you like him or whether he's done things in the past that are objectionable or not. It's what he was doing now or not doing now. And when he was murdered, and at the time he was murdered, even before, there was nothing that he was doing to Americans or imminently doing to them that posed any kind of threat or reason to assassinate him. Donald Trump is a murderer and a coward and a genocider. And he also is a murderer here for inciting violence, which is what he's going to be impeached for tomorrow. Well, we'll see if that happens, because first, there's this small matter of a vote today on Mike Pence and the 25th Amendment. And I think I said that it's a largely symbolic gesture designed to pressure Mike Pence. Donald Trump is a murderer. And I think people can see that now. And if they don't, they're lying to themselves. Or they are members of a cult. The violence in the streets that Donald Trump is talking about, or did talk about on Fox and Friends in that clip I played from 2014, is the violence you're seeing now. With his cult murdering thug terrorists. This is all what he wants. It's what he wants. This guy came into office as a criminal, and he sure as hell is going to be leaving office as a criminal. That is what is going to happen. And he wants to do as much damage and have as much bloodshed in the country as possible. in these final 8 days of his time at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I know that's really blunt. I know that's really graphic. I know that's really powerful, perhaps, to hear. But that is the truth. And that is the thing you have to understand, which is why I'm going to also get into the wisdom or folly of having an inauguration on the U.S. Capitol steps. But next, the impeachment thing. Welcome back. One of these days, I promise I'm going to do for you, well, I shouldn't promise this, a rendition of Captain and Tennille's Muskrat Love. Oh, dearie me. That's If you want a complete diversion from everything that's going on in this world, then tune in sometime in the future where I completely make an idiot of myself and do a rendition of Captain and Tennille's Muskrat Love. Hey, what's not to like about Captain and Tennille? Look, I know that some people go, who? And I know that there are other people that go, oh, they were awful. And then I know that there are still other people that go, no, they were cool. I like Captain and Tennille. I hope that I'm talking to the latter group. I hope I'm talking to that last group. I really do. But if I'm not, so be it. Oh, dearie me. We do have to laugh. It's not much to laugh at, but there are things in our own lives, perhaps, even amidst some of the challenges, where I think we can find some joy. And perhaps we can find some joy in watching a good television program that is a little bit more lighthearted. Or read a book that makes us kind of laugh and makes us feel and makes us connect to things. Or we can, you know, whatever it might be, watch Dave Chappelle or watch Wanda Sykes or what something that makes us laugh. You know, I don't know. You know, I think there's it's important to do that. When you talk about self-care, it is important to do those things. Take a walk, if you can walk, if you're able to, or if you're not able to walk, if there is a window nearby and you are indoors somewhere, poke your head out of a window and just inhale the air. I know the air, pollution-wise, may not be great, but reasonably fresh air. And I put that word reasonably and fresh, both of those words in quote. Take stock if you can, because I'm not taking anybody or anything for granted. So take those timeouts. Take those timeouts from social media too, by the way. And here I am, you know, telling you that. But I do, at times, take timeouts from social media. It's very important for your health, mental health. I also, as I think I alluded to yesterday, take timeouts from watching the news. I know that these next 8 days, you probably won't be doing that. And I don't blame you. But note that if you aren't going to do the timeouts, then make sure you try to limit the amount of time you spend in front of a TV watching this stuff. Really, pick a spot, pick some spots, pick two or three things that you like to watch on the news on a daily basis, or in this case, since it's all opinion journalism now, as I decried yesterday. Take, you know, two or three of those shows and watch just two of them instead of the usual three or four that you watch. Try to limit it to two. Can you do that? And then on the, you know, then on Inauguration Day, go hog wild. Or even beyond that, you know, because, I mean, this stuff is not going to end with the breathless gyrations. Although, of course, once this clown, this murderer has gone, it will be something that might be a little easier. But we still got to watch out for this. This stuff is not going to stop when this guy's gone. You know, I mean, that's another truth that we have to look at. As I now slide back into the more dire and serious ever-present things that we are swimming around in. I want to just button up a couple of things here. One of them is that even today, Donald Trump said, well, there's tremendous anger at impeachment, but I don't want any violence. I mean, give me a break. That's the classic Donald Trump, right? Is to send out the doublespeak in the same sentence, the mixed message, which is what these fascists and dictators do, is that they send out doublespeak. They do double talk. They do the mixed message. They confuse, right? On the one hand, oh, there's tremendous anger out here about the impeachment process. Tremendous anger. So what's those two words suggesting to you? And then on the other hand, but I want no violence. Give me a break. That was as per Sky News today. You know, it's just nonsense. He wants violence, trust me. Whenever he says something, when it comes to violence or hatred, bet the other way. If he's telling you that he hates people, believe him. If he's giving you code words and bullhorns, believe him. But if he's saying that he's not racist, and certainly if he's saying he's the least racist, which means he's racist, then of course, you bet the other way on those things. And when he says, I want no violence, bet the other way. He wants violence. That is his call. He's in Texas today, near the scene of the Alamo, a violent battle. So what is that? I mean, this guy is doing this stuff for a reason. Oh, now I'm going to be talking about the border in Texas 8 days before I'm out of here, right? And I'm going to destroy the country as much as I can before I go. I'm a tornado of violence. That's what he's telling you. And that's what he's doing. Oh, I'm going to be in Texas discussing border protection. Border protection. What about getting rid of your thugs and terrorists who breached a border of national security basically this past week at the U.S. Capitol building? And I'm going to be near the scene of the Alamo. Come on. Give me a break. I mean, this is all about violence for him. It's all about violence. This is all about violence. I want no violence. Give me a break. Everybody knows it's doublespeak. He wants violence. That's exactly what he means. It's not even coded language. So that's really the thing I want to button up from that previous segment. I want to get on to this now, though, because the next thing is, and I'm probably forgetting to tell you something else that I wanted to get through here. That's what happens when you do these unscripteds, as I do. I do this unscripted, as I've told you before, and it does present, there's something good about being in the moment of that, but most, pretty much everything on TV is scripted, and people who are really good at doing that make it sound as if it's not scripted, but everything on TV is. I mean, my gosh. And on the radio, too, to a large extent, very much scripted. It is. It really is. But the thing about not being scripted is that you can forget to make this point that you want to make, and you've got to make it either later on or in a different episode of a podcast or anything else. Whereas if you have this all written down, it is easier to then pull it up and then just go. But I want to get on to what's happening today in the House of Representatives here in the U.S. The House of Representatives today is going to be debating, and or by the time you hear this episode, has debated or is debating or has debated, I should say, the motion that's going to be on the floor for Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to immediately remove Donald Trump. And what we've seen here now is what I call symbolism. This vote today and this debate today before it, the debate's going to probably start, it's probably started already if you're listening to this at a later time, so I'm not going to timestamp anything. But the point is that this debate that you're hearing now and that you're seeing now or that you have seen is largely symbolic. This vote's going to be symbolic. It is strictly designed to put pressure on Mike Pence, who in various reports, if you believe them, seems to be saying that he's not going to invoke this. So this 25th Amendment, the cabinet's really not going to do it. Look, the cabinet is basically is non-existent now. You've had 20 people resign. My God, you know. And I want to see Donald Trump out yesterday. And quite frankly, I want to see these 147 Republicans out yesterday too. You know, the Republicans that all stood to try to overturn these results. I want them out. They should be impeached. They should be thrown out. All 147 of them, including these new freshmen who hadn't been sworn in 72 hours and were up there. As the violence and the terrorism was happening to that Capitol, shouting, "Oh, my constituents are outside here." No, they're your thugs and your terrorists. That was the gun-toting congresswoman who just got there. We've got to do something about the kinds of people you're voting in, America. I mean, what are you voting in these gun-toting thugs for? Who are on the floor of the just been there 72 hours. You know, there used to be a protocol in the Senate and in the House about these upstarts who get up there. You know, you're supposed to sit back and, you know, take stock of things. And then you start, after a few weeks and months, you start to bed in, so to speak. And then you start to make your voice heard more prominently. But this one, I'm not even going to mention her name. You know who I'm talking about. I've tweeted about her many times. She is an absolute disgrace to any notion of leadership. And she ran her campaign on showcasing her guns, which is why we have a serious problem in this country, because lots of people voted for her. And don't tell me, well, it's a conservative district. I want to scrap away for a second this notion of conservative and liberal. It's people with a mentality that this particular person is tapping into. It pre-existed conservative and liberal. So give me a break about, oh, it's conservative. I mean, yes, obviously, there is a party who is identifying with that. It's called the Republican Party. Of course. But what I am saying is that there are people who voted for that. Yes, they're Republicans, I get it. But there's a mentality, is what I'm getting at. What an emptiness. That is so empty. And it symbolizes something really deep about the country, which I've kind of alluded to in this episode earlier on. But during the course of the day, you have heard, for those of you who have heard it, these debates about Mike Pence, you know, that's happened. And then, of course, the vote is going to happen or has happened. And, you know, chances are the vote was successful. But will Mike Pence ever do anything? Because no matter what the House says today, that vote is not something that Mike Pence has to even listen to. He can go, and I suspect that that is going to be his reaction. This is going to be left to the House and to the Senate. And what will happen here is that Mike Pence will not invoke the 25th Amendment. And what's going to happen is tomorrow, Wednesday, the 13th of January, 2021, you're going to have a full debate and vote on impeachment. That's what's going to happen. And Donald J. Trump will be impeached most likely tomorrow. Lickety split. And the basic thing is that my question is, you know, once that happens tomorrow, or maybe Thursday at the very latest, but I expect it to be tomorrow, Wednesday. Once that happens, where's the Senate? I mean, the Senate's supposed to be back open on the 19th, but that can be changed. I know the majority leader in his outgoing time as majority leader, is not going to move that a muscle. But my whole thing is, my goodness me, you know, this guy kept, Mitch McConnell that is, kept the Senate open to what ass hour for many occasions when it meant, or if it meant trying to get rid of Obamacare, if it meant trying to bring in yet another round of billionaire tax cuts, whether it meant ramming through a Supreme Court justice during an election season, whether it meant government shutdowns, to what ass hour he kept that Senate up and running through sleet, through snow, through rain, neither sleet nor rain, nor snow, nor whatever. You know that U.S. Postal Service axiom. And what about Louis DeJoy? Can we impeach him too? I mean, no one's talking about Louis DeJoy or any of these people. I know Chad Wolf stepped down yesterday. Well, he was illegally appointed. We all know that. That's been news forever. He should never have held that position as the acting. How bad must you be and how criminal must you be to illegally appoint an acting Department of Homeland Security head? I mean, you've got to be really criminal to appoint illegally an acting, a pretending Department of Homeland Security head. Oh, but it's only the security of the homeland we're talking about, of the country we're talking about here. Jeez. And I'm going to just act as if I'm the actual person in charge. But I got here illegally. Like I said, Donald Trump got into office illegally. He's going to leave that way. And he's going to leave a lot of violence and destruction in his wake for Joe Biden to clean up, as is always the case with Republicans these last 60 years, leaving messes for the Democratic Party to clean up. We can't keep having that kind of yo-yo government between those two like that. We need a life-affirming agenda. But Mitch McConnell can open up that Senate right now if he chooses to. And the beauty of the two victories a week ago today by John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock is that we're going to have a new majority leader next week named Chuck Schumer. And thank goodness for that, because that means we'll get some things done around here. Jeez, God. I mean, it's just crazy. Mitch McConnell can open the Senate today. Unless he's flying to St. Petersburg. And I'm not talking about St. Petersburg, Florida. I'm actually talking about St. Peter's Square. Or rather, the Kremlin, to be more precise. Maybe he's got some business out there to take care of. Some loose ends to tie. By the way, where is Vladimir? Where is Putin? He's been awfully quiet. I'm sure he's busy doing things. I mean, hacking and all that, but he's awfully quiet, though. He noticed? Hasn't said a word of congratulations, to the best of my knowledge, to Joe Biden. Not a word of it. Not a word. Interesting. I'm going to read this impeachment resolution, and I'm going to provide a link to it. This is the resolution that's going to be voted on tomorrow, because yes, it will be voted on tomorrow. There's no way that Mike Pence is going to do this today. He's not going to invoke this 25th Amendment. It's just not going to happen. It's a good try by the Democrats. I think it's a good effort. I think you have to do these things. This guy cannot be allowed to walk out the back door. He just cannot be allowed to do that. You know, this is not optional. This has got to be done. And all these people that go, well, he's leaving in a few days' time. He might be leaving in a few days' time, but he's not leaving quietly. He's leaving violently. And there are plots all over this blooming place at all these state capitol houses. I mean, we should be impeaching him again. Absolutely. I mean, there's always going to be people who find excuses not to. Always people who are going to say, well, censorship. Yeah, they're only concerned, some of these folks, about censorship when it's a white voice that's being censored or silenced. And he's not even being silenced because he's got plenty of megaphones. He's got right-wing media. He's got this. He's got, come on. I know Paul is shut down, but so that, but this guy is still talking. He's got press secretary. He's still got megaphones. Still. But these people, oh, censorship. You know? When black folk is censored, I don't hear any of these people say a damn thing. You know? When brown people are censored, you don't hear anybody coming out and saying, well, they were censored on Twitter. Oh, their account was shut down. And that's horrible. I don't see any world leaders coming out and saying a thing, anything, when this happens to black and brown people. Yeah, but this murderer, you know, oh, censor, yeah. The white guy, oh, yeah, you know, he's, this is really bad and dangerous. And I'm not necessarily saying that this isn't bad and dangerous, but he is bad and dangerous. And when this speech is killing people, Twitter and anybody else has the absolute right to end him on Twitter. Absolutely. They're a private company, number one. Keep that in mind. Number two, his rhetoric and his tweets have led to violence. It's not even stochastic. I mean, it is stochastic terrorism, but it's absolute violence. Liberate Virginia, Michigan, and then you got people trying to kill a governor. Shut up. Oh, please. Oh, but he's censored. His First Amendment rights. Shut the you-know-what up. Come on. You know, give me a break. You got black women trying to speak, and I remember this with Jemele Hill. Shut up. And when she said stuff about Trump on Twitter, her ass got suspended. And ESPN suspended her, and this one suspended her. I think Twitter suspended her. Shut the you know. And where were you? Where were these people? Come on. Come on, folks. Let's be really honest here. Don't close your eyes. And I remember that. And she ended up leaving ESPN, and she's gone on to better things. Bless her heart, Jemele Hill. Business person. Activist. Podcast. She's done so. I'd like to talk to her on this podcast if I could. I would love to talk to Jemele Hill for a few minutes and just to talk to her, you know, find out how she's doing, find out, you know, what good, great things she's doing. She's doing a lot of great things. She's got these great t-shirts. I wear them every now and again with Support Black Journalists on the t-shirt. Lovely t-shirt. It's absolutely brilliant. She's got a go to her store. I'll link to her too, by the way, to her store. Go and patronize her store. If you want to support somebody in terms of supporting the black press, as I've talked about, and black journalists, she's one of them. Fine advocate, really good person. And so, you know, when she got suspended and Trump called her out, where were these people defending her? Please. Again, it's all race. It's all racists and people who have selective amnesia. They don't remember that Jemele Hill, you know, she got suspended, she got this, she got that. And they were silent. They were silent. Anyway. All right, when I come back, I promise I will read out this impeachment resolution. Welcome back. So the House resolution of impeachment, the article of impeachment that will be voted on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, in the U.S. House of Representatives is as follows. It was written, by the way, by David Cicilline, Ted Lieu, and Jamie Raskin, who, by the way, suffered a loss in his family last week. And my sincerest condolences, heartfelt condolences to he and his family. So this is the impeachment resolution, the article of impeachment that was introduced yesterday to the House on the House floor, and it has been received and it will be voted on tomorrow. And here as follows is the impeachment article. I'm going to read it out from start to finish. It's 4 pages. It'll take about maybe 3 minutes or less to read out to you, probably less than 3 minutes. I'll read it quicker than that. And I'll provide a link to it as well so you can actually read it. As I said, it's 4 pages. Resolution. Impeaching Donald John Trump, President of the United States, for high crimes and misdemeanors. Resolved that Donald John Trump, President of the United States, is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and that the following article of impeachment be exhibited to the United States Senate. Article of impeachment exhibited by the House of Representatives of the United States of America in the name of itself and of the people of the United States of America against Donald John Trump, President of the United States of America, in maintenance and support of its impeachment against him for high crimes and misdemeanors. Article 1. Incitement of insurrection. The Constitution provides that the House of Representatives shall have sole power of impeachment, and that the President shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Further, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution prohibits any person who has engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States from holding any office under the United States. In his conduct while President of the United States and in violation of his constitutional oath, faithfully to execute the office of President of the United States and, to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States and in violation of his constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, Donald John Trump engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors by inciting violence against the government of the United States in that, on January 6, 2021, pursuant to the 12th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the House of Representatives, and the Senate met at the United States Capitol for a joint session of Congress to count the votes of the Electoral College. In the months preceding the joint session, President Trump repeatedly issued false statements asserting that the presidential election results were the product of widespread fraud and should not be accepted by the American people or certified by state or federal officials. Shortly before the joint session commenced, President Trump addressed a crowd at the Ellipse in Washington, D.C. There, he reiterated false claims that we won this election and we won it by a landslide. He also willfully made statements that, in context, encouraged and foreseeably resulted in lawless action at the Capitol, such as, if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Thus, incited by President Trump, members of the crowd he had addressed, in an attempt to, among other objectives, interfere with the joint session's solemn constitutional duty to certify the results of the 2020 presidential election, unlawfully breached and vandalized the Capitol, injured and killed law enforcement personnel, menaced members of Congress, the Vice President, and congressional personnel, and engaged in other violent, deadly, destructive, and seditious acts. President Trump's conduct on January 6, 2021, followed his prior efforts to subvert and obstruct the certification of the results of the 2020 presidential election. Those prior efforts included a phone call on January 2, 2021, during which President Trump urged the Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, to find enough votes to overturn the Georgia presidential election results and threatened Secretary Raffensperger if he failed to do so. In all this, President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government. He threatened the integrity of the democratic system, interfered with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiled a co-equal branch of government. He thereby betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, Donald John Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to national security, democracy, and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office, and has acted in a manner grossly incompatible with self-governance and the rule of law. Donald John Trump thus warrants impeachment and trial, removal from office, and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. That is your four-page resolution of the article of impeachment, which will be voted on tomorrow, Wednesday, in the U.S. House of Representatives, exactly 1 week after this terrorist attack, this second coup attempt. Make no mistake, that is what it is. It was a terrorist attack. It was definitely a terrorist attack. It was insurrection. It was sedition. All of those things. It was also a coup attempt. And all you're hearing now, if you read the New York Times, is riot. The word riot is being used, and not the word terrorist attack. That word has absolutely disappeared now from some of these newspapers that I've been looking at lately. It's called a riot, and it's called a mob. And I told you this before. This is not a mob. This was a well-organized, orchestrated operation, an inside job. I've been saying that from the start. Some of you have said that from the start. This is an inside job. It was an inside job. When you've got U.S. Capitol Police, some of them ceding ground and waving people in, I know some of them are Trump supporters, but they're also doing that at the behest of other people who are above them in command, who are also giving that green light, who immediately resigned. I mean, they know what they're in. This is an inside job. And Donald Trump and his acolytes and his fellow band of criminals, they did this. You got people on the outside that helped. Ginny Thomas, you know, she the spouse of Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas should not be on the Supreme Court. And Ginny Thomas should be in jail. I mean, she financed a lot of this. The reports are there. That she financed them and paid for buses to bring these people in, knowing of what they are, who and what they are. Facebook is getting rid of all these accounts, and Twitter's got rid of over 70,000 of these alphabet freaks accounts. You know who they are. I'm not going to even mention the letter of the name of the alphabet. They're alphabet freaks. They're dangerous. They're cultists. They're extremely dangerous. They were in that. They were part of the terrorist mob. Mob, oh God. Here I go saying it. See? That's the language we're speaking in. It's not a mob. This is a well-organized operation to overthrow the United States government. That's what it is. And I talked about how language is so important. It is important. This was a terrorist attack. This was not some mob. These guys had zip ties, plastic handcuffs, and military fatigue. That is not some mob. It was well organized. They were told where to go. You've got that same congressperson I told you about earlier who was tweeting out the location of where Speaker Pelosi's office was. Give me a break. Oh, but it's a mob. Oh, it was spontaneous. It was disorganized. See, I keep telling you, I told you this yesterday, didn't I, if you listened? The white violence, I told you this many times. I told you this with the Mia Ponsetto situation. Attacking Keon Harold, the 14-year-old boy. White violence is always rationalized and championed in America by a system that, of course, is set up to do that and set up by white men, and a system that is designed to be violent and oppressive to black people. So why would any of you be surprised that the news media is now using terms like mob and riot? Because the very people who run those newspapers are the very people whose interests are part of that same system of oppression and control. I mean, that's not some conspiracy fantasy. He or she or they who writes the language controls the tune, controls the song, right? If you're putting in your paper mob, when what we all could see was that these folks intended to kill Speaker Pelosi, kill Mike Pence. They were shouting it. They intended to kill that man. They were shouting, hang Mike Pence. And you're talking about this being a mob? They had gallows and nooses outside the U.S. Capitol building. This is what I'm talking about here, folks. We have to start talking in a language that is honest. You've got a congressperson tweeting out Speaker Pelosi's location. You've got people destroying her offices. You've got a police officer. If it's not for him, half the Senate could be dead. You've got Trump out there saying you've got to fight like hell. This was orchestrated. This has been known. There was very little security. It took nearly half an hour, if not more, for reinforcements to come. And they were literally 5 minutes away. So how did it take them six times as long to get to a place they were literally 5 minutes from? Oh, but it's a mob. I mean, come on, people. You can't fall for this. Again, it's this excuse for white violence that I talked about yesterday with Angus King, the independent senator from Maine. Oh, but I understand it. I don't condone, but I understand. They were told by the media that, oh, shut up. Black folk have been told for centuries that we were less than. Give me a shut the you know. We didn't go and react to that by committing terrorist violence. We didn't go and burn down the Capitol. I know we built the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol building. We didn't go burn down something because someone told us for centuries that we were let over and over and over again. And not just told us. It was reflected in law. It was reflected in education, in media, in politics, in everything it was reflected in. We didn't go and tear up a Capitol. We didn't go and then react to that by killing people. But Angus King sits there and says, oh, I can understand why they did it. Because, you know, they were told by the media, they were told by politicians for months, we've been told for blooming centuries that we didn't amount to less than anything. And you're talking about some months with some entitled, racist-ass, white thugs, violent terrorists? Oh, but I understand why they did it. Why they killed people. I understand. I tell you, I keep telling you, you got to open your eyes, folks. You got to open your eyes. And all of these people who were soft-pedaling this terrorist attack and not calling it the coup that it also is, when you've got the second in line to be president hiding in the freaking bunker, in a Senate bunker someplace, and you've got the third, the next in line, Pence, and the second in line, Pelosi, hiding for their blooming lives. And you're not calling that a coup. You're not talking about an attempted overthrow of government. And you're not talking about a terrorist attack. You're talking about a mob. Shut up. You know, it's just disgraceful. And that's what happens when you rationalize and say you understand white violence and white terrorism. But Angus King, do you understand when black people are violent? Do you understand that? Would you get on 60 Minutes and talk that? Do you understand that? Huh? Or if black people use violence in self-defense, do you understand that, Angus King? Would you get on 60 Minutes, please, and explain to the audience that you understand? He's talking about for months they were told, for months those white privileged people were told that their media, the right wing told them, and they lied to them. And they told them for months that the election was, that the election, it wasn't even anything about them. It was about the election. For months they were told. We have personally been told through the institutions of this country, the systems of this country, the media, everything else, that we are less than nothing. We're not in newsrooms. We're not here. We're not there. You got a blooming cover of the next vice president, most disrespectfully put out there. Like she's literally just on her way to skateboarding with the skateboarders. I mean, that's our next vice president, people. And thank goodness somebody had the decency to at least put on the internet cover a better photo and better arrangement for the now soon to be vice president, Kamala Harris. That's how they treat us. You know, they erase black women, erase them. You know, Solange Knowles, you know, let's change her hairstyle. Let's cut off this portion of the photo that we had of her. The same thing with Lupita Nyong'o. Let's change her hair. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's Photoshop. Let's crop it. That's the atmosphere you're living in. Come on, folks. But then the white violence comes. That's white violence, too, when you're cropping a black woman's photo. That's a different kind of violence. It's anti-black violence, for sure, in a different way, but it's there nonetheless. You're trying to deny her humanity, her Africanness, her blackness. So you want to chop off some of her, some of the hair. You want to edit that out. And then you use the word mob for clearly violent, white, terrorist killers. And you then say riot when it's clearly a violent attempt, an attempt to violently overthrow government. And you're talking about mobs and riots? Oh, God, please, give me a break. But there you go. That's the system you're in. At least think about that for a few moments, please. Welcome back. Finally, I want to get to this inauguration, and I have outlined this on several occasions here. And thanks for your endurance here. And as ever, again, I want to reiterate, I appreciate you listening. And I want to, again, put this out because I made a video yesterday, which I will link to in the liner notes of this episode. And it is really an eight minute distillation of why this inauguration that's going to happen on the 20th, 8 days from now, should really be moved. It really should be, in light of what you've heard me say here for the last little while, and in light of what you know about what happened last week, what you saw, what you experienced, what you're probably still traumatized by, that very, very... those images are just going to be unforgettable, as are still lots of other images of American violence, whether they're against black people, whether they're against white kids in Kent State, whether they're, again, I mean, there's all kinds of histories of this, right? But particularly against black people. That has been the foremost principle of white American rule, is anti-black violence. And we have a black woman who is also South Asian descent and et cetera, who is going to be sworn in next week alongside a white man named Joe Biden. And the black woman who was so disrespectfully treated on the cover of that magazine, Anna Wintour, who doesn't have but what? How many black people at Vogue? See what I mean? I don't want to go back to what I said just a few moments ago, but you get it, right? You understand. Come on, we're not foolish here. We get what's going on. Here's the thing I'm getting at here, folks. given what I've just said about how violent things are and how openly violent now, you've had in 1963, September 15th of that year, the bombing of a church with four little girls in it. We've had all these things. I've talked about this. Oklahoma City in 1995. 185 people or so murdered by Timothy McVeigh. You've had all these violent events. You had what happened last week. And into that breach now, in 8 days' time from this very day I'm speaking, on January 12th, is going to be an inauguration, which as of now is still scheduled to be held on the U.S. Capitol steps. And you have a black woman, and I'm so thankful that you do, but you have a black, and you have a black woman as vice president, who's going to be sworn in as vice president, I should say. This is just too dangerous. It's just too, not Kamala Harris. The specter of holding an inauguration swearing in the open, outdoors, like that, is just too much of a danger with this climate. You can hold the event inside at some undisclosed location. You can do that. I guess, though, there'd be further security risks in doing that, too, though. Just because it's inside somewhere. Not to mention the coronavirus. Can we not forget that, please? But there is really something to be said about the idea that this inauguration should be moved elsewhere. I've talked about this before, but in the 8-minute video I will link to, you will see it in the liner notes of this episode. You can see me talking about it. So I won't be redundant here, but only to say that the Biden inaugural committee should really move this inauguration. I don't like what's going on with it. I don't like, obviously, what's going on with the violence and the terrorism in this country. This white terrorism is something, as I said yesterday, the FBI has told us about forever. You've seen it. White terrorism has been here for forever. With the Klan, with all these other groups, or with everyday white people calling the police on 6-year-old black girls, or on any black person, that's a form of white terror. Why is some white person picking up a cell phone, calling the cops on you? Why is Amy Cooper doing that? Why did Amy Cooper do that last year? Apart from the obvious reasons, racism, racist. That's terrorism to me. It doesn't have to be the definition. See, we get all so damn definitional about everything. And that's how language controls people. I've talked a lot about language in this episode. But there's language that's supposed to edify, and then there's language that constricts and tries to silence. And definitions that are made up by people who are in control of the language and the system that language comes out of. Oh, well, you're not, well, they're not terrorists because they don't fit our definition of it. And the people who made up these words are the people who had black folk in chains, enslaved, as they were making up these words. Shut the come on. I mean, people think the so-called founding fathers and the first 14 of the first 16 or 12 of the first 15 presidents of this country, United States, owned black people as property, enslaved them. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, we go on and on. Come on, people. That's the America that we are dealing with. That is us. That is who this country is. And again, I don't want to hear someone say, this isn't who we are. As James Baldwin said, we are only very sporadically and unwillingly. Rather, I should say, we are very sporadically the land of the free. In fact, we're not even really that. We are only sporadically, if not unwillingly, the home of the brave. I mean, I know I've not really accurately quoted, that's paraphrasing James Baldwin. we have not confronted all this violence. So as a result, all this violence is confronting us. And for that reason, and for the reasons of the history of violence in this country, and what has happened to political figures, some of them, in the context of the history of this country, and what we're dealing with now, I really believe, truly believe, that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris should be sworn in at a different location. I don't care how much security they have. If people plan something and they've organized it, and you've got currently in the Director of National Intelligence an alphabet freak who believes in conspiracy theories, and you've got people in the remaining embers of a criminal, tyrannical administration, people who did not grant the Maryland governor the permission to use National Guard while people were being killed on those Capitol steps and in that building last week, then you've got a situation that is too dangerous to ever afford to have a swearing in on the very steps of the very Capitol that was attacked by terrorists last week. It is too high a price to even want to try to pay to tempt that kind of fate. So once again, I beseech thee, Biden Inaugural Committee, to please change the location of this inauguration. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.